Translation. No one in this material world has become free from the four principles, birth, death, old age, and disease, even by fleeing to various planets. But now that you have appeared, my Lord, death is fleeing in fear of you, and the living entities, having obtained shelter at your lotus feet by your mercy, are sleeping in full mental peace. So, Srila Prabhupada's purport. There are different categories of living entities, but everyone is afraid of death. The highest aim of the karmis is to be promoted to the higher heavenly planets, where the duration of life is very long. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 8:17, Sahasra Yuga Paryantam Aharyad Brahmano Vidu. One day of Brahma equals 1,000 yugas, and each yuga consists of 4,300,000 years. Similarly, Brahma has a night of 1,000 times 4,300,000 years. In this way, we may calculate Brahma's month and year, but even Brahma, who lives for millions and millions of years, Dviparatha Kala, also must die. According to Vedic Shastra, the inhabitants of the higher planetary systems live for 10,000 years, and just as Brahma's day is calculated to equal 300 million years of our years, one day in the higher planetary systems equals 6 of our months. Karmis, therefore, try for promotion to the higher planetary systems, but this cannot free them from death. In this material world, everyone from Brahma to the insignificant ant must die. Therefore, this world is called Martyaloka. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Abrahmana Bhuvana Loka Punararvartinojuna. As long as one is within this material world, either on Brahmaloka or any other loka within this universe, one must undergo the Kala Chakra of one life after another. Bhutva Bhutva Praliyate. But if one returns to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yadgatva Nanivartante, one need not re-enter the limits of time. Therefore, devotees who have taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord can sleep very peacefully with this assurance from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 4:9, how does it go? And particularly, Prabhupada is saying, Tyaktva deham punar janma naiti. After giving up the present body, a devotee who has understood Krishna as he is need not return to this material world. The constitutional position for the living entity is eternity. Nahanyate hanyamane sharire nitya shashvato yam. Every living entity is eternal. But because of having fallen into this material world, one wanders within the universe, continually changing from one body to another. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. From Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, 19th chapter, text 151. Everyone is wandering up and down within this universe, but one who is sufficiently fortunate comes in contact with Krishna consciousness by the mercy of the spiritual master and takes to the path of devotional service. Then one is assured of eternal life with no fear of death. When Krishna appears, everyone is freed from fear of death. Yet Devaki felt, "We are still afraid of Kamsa, although you have appeared as our son." She was more or less bewildered as to why this should be so, and she appealed to the Lord to free her and Vasudev from this fear. In this connection, it may be noted that the moon is one of the heavenly planets. From the Vedic literature, we understand that one who goes to the moon receives a life with a duration of 10,000 years in which to enjoy the fruits of pious activities. If our so-called scientists are going to the moon, why should they come back here? We must conclude without a doubt that they have never gone to the moon. To go to the moon, one must have the qualification of pious activities. Then one may go there and live. If one has gone to the moon, why should he return to this planet where life is of a very short duration? Om Ajnana Timrandasya Jananjana Salakaya Chakshur Anmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Svapadantikam. So, don't ever think that Prabhupada hasn't given us much to talk about in this one purport and verse alone. There's enough for quite a number of days and weeks discussion. So the context. This context is that Lord Krishna has appeared from the womb of Devaki within the prison house. The prison house belonging to Kamsa. Thank you. Yes, just checking if everyone's awake. So, the idea being that Krishna, although we are all taking birth in a prison house, Krishna, he is also, interestingly enough, taking birth in the prison house of Kamsa. But Krishna's taking birth in the prison house of Kamsa is very different from our taking birth in the prison house of this material world. When we have to take birth, which, you know what they say? They say that friends are the family you choose. So we haven't particularly consciously chosen our parents, or they may not have necessarily consciously chosen us as their child. But Krishna is very different. In fact, Krishna's parents, they did choose that they wanted to have Krishna as their child. So they're very fortunate. And Krishna, he chose his parents that I want to take birth from the womb of Devaki. Not just once, but three times, actually. So the situation is very nice that Lord Krishna has appeared from the womb of Devaki. And the situation of Krishna's appearance is very extraordinary. It's not like an ordinary birth by any stretch of the imagination. And I'd just like to share with you a short passage from Prabhupada's Krishna book, because here Prabhupada explains in chapter 3, actually, what was the situation in that prison house. It's very fascinating. And it's very important to regularly hear and understand and appreciate the beautiful pastimes of Lord Krishna. Can anyone say why? Sorry? Purification. Yes. And more than that?
To advance?
To Okay, anything else? Prabhupada gave a hint, one verse in Bhagavad Gita he mentioned in the purport. This is also true. And specifically, this one verse, chapter 4, text 9 in Bhagavad Gita, which Brahmananda Prabhu, as he was then Brahmananda Swami, told me that Prabhupada had told him that this is the most important verse from Bhagavad Gita. And that verse is Janma Karma Chame Divyam Evam Yo Veti Tatvata Tyaktva Deham Punar Janma Naiti Sorjuna Eti Mam Sorjuna. Krishna is saying that one who knows in truth, Veti Tatvata, the Krishna's Janma, his appearance in this world, not like our Janma, Krishna's Janma and Krishna's karma, his activities, are all Divyam. What is the significance? Divyam means transcendental. So this is transcendental knowledge, not material knowledge. Krishna is saying that one who knows in truth the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities, tyaktva, upon leaving, deha. You may be familiar with this word from Bhagavad Gita. Deha means the body. We've all got one, a material body. It's like a prison uniform. We've all got one. We all know we're in prison. We're all in the same boat, all prisoners, all guilty as charged. So, tyaktva deham, upon leaving the body, punar, again, janma, birth, na eti, does not attain. He doesn't take birth again by simply knowing in truth the transcendental nature of Krishna's janma and Krishna's karma, his birth and activities. What happens to him? Eti mam sojuna. Krishna says he comes to me. Oh. So what sort of investment is this to try to understand in truth the transcendental nature properly in truth of Krishna's appearance and activities? So this section, this chapter from the 10th canto, is incredibly important. Anyway, I was just going to read you a little bit, if I may. I know we've read a lot, but this is a beautiful section, so please try to hear and focus and meditate on the situation within Kamsa's prison house. Vasudev saw that wonderful child born as a baby with four hands, holding conch shell, club, disc, and lotus flower, decorated with the mark of Sri Vatsa, wearing the jeweled necklace of Kostuba stone, dressed in yellow silk, appearing dazzling like a bright blackish cloud, wearing a helmet bedecked with the Vaidurya stone, valuable bracelets, earrings, and similar other ornaments all over his body, and an abundance of hair on his head. Due to the extraordinary features of the child, Vasudev was struck with wonder. How could a newly born child be so decorated? He could therefore understand that Lord Krishna had now appeared, and he became overpowered by the occasion. Vasudev very humbly wondered that although he was an ordinary living entity conditioned by material nature and was externally imprisoned by Kamsa, the all-pervading personality of Godhead, Vishnu or Krishna, was appearing as a child in his home. Home was his prison, exactly in his original position. No earthly child is born with four hands, decorated with ornaments and nice clothing, fully equipped with all the signs of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Over and over again, Vasudev glanced at his child and he considered how to celebrate this auspicious moment. Generally, when a male child is born, he thought, people observe the occasion with jubilant celebrations. And in my home, although I am imprisoned, the supreme personality of Godhead has taken birth. How many millions of times should I be prepared to observe this auspicious ceremony? So it's also described that this is another very interesting point. When Vasudeva was convinced that the newborn child was the supreme personality of Godhead himself, he bowed down with folded hands and began to offer him prayers. At that time, Vasudeva was in the transcendental position. In fact, in the Krishna book dictation tapes, Prabhupada explains, Vasudeva was in the transcendental position of thinking. And he became completely free from all fear of Kamsa. The newborn baby was also flashing his effulgence within the room in which he appeared. So very extraordinary appearance. This is a good one for you, Jayakrishna. You can make this a very dramatic performance when you do the Janmashtami drama. So Krishna's appearance is so extraordinary. And we're actually concerned to try to learn the process of Krishna consciousness. What is that process of Krishna consciousness? What is the process? Very simply. Shravanam Kirtanam. Yes, very good. Shravanam Kirtanam Smaranam. Because by hearing about Krishna and trying to appreciate and also vibrating those same subject matters, that kirtanam, then not only the subject matter that we've been hearing becomes very much more strongly fixed within our hearts and within our minds so that we can remember Krishna more, but also, if you want to understand the science of Krishna by explaining to others, actually that whole subject matter becomes much more easily assimilated. Actually, Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam that this can only be assimilated by hearing and explaining, which he describes as kirtanam. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada's books are the sweetest and most valuable kirtanam that we can lay our ears on to actually hear what Srila Prabhupada is trying to share with us and understand, help us understand. The idea is literally that we have to try to get the idea. We have to get the ideas of Krishna consciousness. And if we get the idea, then we can also explain it to other people. And as we explain it to other people, which is the whole program of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Amara Agyaya Guru Hai Tara Edesh, Lord Chaitanya's order to all of us is that you become guru and try to liberate everyone in this land. How? Yare Deka Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh. That wherever you go, whomever you meet, speak to them about Krishna. Tell them the philosophy of Krishna. So this is actually our program. This is what Lord Chaitanya wanted to do, to get everyone involved in Krishna Katha. And sometimes we may think, oh, well, actually becoming a guru, that's a whole big thing, you know, becoming a guru. But Prabhupada explains it's actually not very difficult. Very simple. Simply we hear about Krishna, and faithfully, with fidelity, as we have heard it, repeat it in the same way. Tell others and explain to others about Krishna. Because obviously there are many varieties of guru, and if we read Prabhupada's books, especially we only have to read the first chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita to see how there are varieties of gurus. And the first verse, the first words, the first two words of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Vande Gurun, offering obeisances to the spiritual masters. Not only the spiritual masters in the disciplic succession, going back to Lord Brahma and to Krishna, but also the different varieties of spiritual masters, those who are giving us initiation and those who are giving us guidance, instruction on the path of devotional service, as well as those who actually introduce us to Krishna consciousness. So, but practically speaking, even if we may feel that how will I ever become an initiating guru is actually pretty irrelevant, because the real point is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is ordering that we try to help others understand the science of Krishna and engage in Krishna Katha. This is wanted. And for this purpose, this Krishna consciousness movement has been made by Srila Prabhupada so that we can actually hear and discuss about Krishna. Yes, jolly good. Thank you. Yes, this is the point. This is the real topic of our discussion, Krishna. And how, fixing our minds on Krishna, we learn from Bhagavad Gita that if we become always absorbed in thought of Krishna, then the transfer is very simple. Transfer means what? Transfer from this particularly continuously changing body to actually a transcendental body that doesn't have to get all the problems of birth, old age, disease, and death, and then again and again. This Kala Chakra. This chakra means what?
Wheel.
Wheel, yes. It's a wheel. It goes round and round and round. And we keep doing the same thing, going round and round and round. You know, you go on a playground, a children's playground, and how many times are you going to go round and round and round on the merry-go-round before you think, really, it's time to get off? So we should come to conclusion in this human form of life that it is time to establish what are the real problems. But unfortunately, the bewildering influence of Maya is so strong that we just can't see what's staring us in the face every time we look in the mirror. The wrinkles, the less teeth, the gray hairs. These things are staring us in the face, actually. But still we think, yes, this body is meant for enjoyment. So in Prabhupada's purport here, he covers so many different points. And there's some very technical information. Technical in the sense that detailed numbers and figures, but these are actually good numbers to be focusing on. Like, for example, how long is a day of Brahma? Anyone? How long? 1,000 full, yes, Divya Yugas sometimes they're called. Divya Yuga means set of four ages. So the calculation on that is quite simple, because Lord Brahma's life, 4.3 billion years, that's easy, you can fit those on your calculator, can't you? No? Anyway, but the simple thing is 1,000 times 4.3 million years, that's Lord Brahma's day, a day in the life, as the song went. But the 4.3 million years, that's a set of four ages.
Jai Hare Krishna, Nama Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya, Pujaya, Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tira, Namaste Saraswati Devi, Gauravani Pachari, Ivisesha Sanyavani Pasti Jadesha.
So Krishna's made the maths quite easy. You know, dividing by 10 is quite simple. So if you take one Divya Yuga, 4.3 million years, and you divide it by 10, it's easy to understand how long each yuga lasts. because 1/10 of that is the Kali Yuga, and then 2/10 of that is the Dwarpa Yuga, and 3/10 of that is the Treta Yuga, and 4/10 of that is the Satya Yuga. So that's how long each yuga lasts. So we're in the winter of our discontent. So this time frame, Prabhupada points out, is such that people don't want to die. And Narada Muni, he very nicely points out to King Yudhisthira that, and this is, you may recall from the purport, this nice point Prabhupada explains from the verse, Mrityu Vyala Bhita, afraid of the serpent of death. So this idea of the serpent of death, the snake is a pretty dangerous thing. In the next word, palayan, running. As soon as a serpent is seen, everyone runs away, fearing immediate death. Has anyone here ever seen or been in close quarters with a venomous snake? You have. Okay. What did you do?
Well, I was trying to get into the house that I was living in when I was living in India.
Hmm.
Mm.
Okay, they killed it, or
they didn't kill it. They captured it in a bin, and then they didn't kill it. They just took it away and threw it over a fence.
Okay.
It was a bis cobra.
Okay, so very venomous, dangerous snake.
They're as venomous as you can
get. Yes, so. Dangerous thing. Normally, you know, we teach the children to say namaste to the devotees and to other living entities. We offer our respects. But this is one living entity. You don't really want to hang about and offer him your humble greetings necessarily. You might want to get away quickly. But the snake is a very significant word used in this connection because Kala Chakra, this wheel of time, is also compared to a serpent. The nature of that time factor is that a serpent, he likes to eat his prey. And therefore it's explained by Narada Muni that this body is already in the jaws of the serpent. So it's finished. Or maybe not quite finished, but it's as good as finished. There's no escape now. Even Krishna, he had that nice pastime where Nanda Maharaj was swallowed by a serpent. But by Krishna's grace, Nanda Maharaj got out from the jaws of that serpent. And by Krishna's grace and by the Guru Kripa, by Krishna Kripa, we can also get ourselves out from the jaws of death. So by ourselves, clearly we understand from Bhagavad Gita that we're not referring to the body, because the body is not the self. But practically speaking, that time factor, which we're all limited by, and strictly under the control of, has already got us in the grips, and it's not going to let go. So, therefore, Prabhupada explains this world is called Martya Loka. It's a world of death. Generally, people become very happy when they see a newborn baby. But actually, that newborn baby, what is it? It's simply the same old elements, just repackaged in an apparently very attractive way. But it's actually the same old thing, the material energy, just repackaged in that way. And so people celebrate under the influence of Krishna's illusory energy. But with intelligence, we can understand this is a living entity who has actually been born to die. Krishna is saying, for one who is born, death is certain. But where we really need to have compassion for other living entities, as well as ourselves, is to understand that we're all in this situation of birth and death. And although the material world is designed in such a way so that we can forget it very easily, that we're going to die, at the same time, we get so many hints from the material energy, but, you know, not being very smart, we still don't usually get it, that everything is deteriorating, which means it's going to come to an end. You know, you go on holiday. I was in Mayapur just a month or so ago, and one of the devotees said to me, he said, oh, you've just got here, so you haven't started thinking about how soon you're going to have to go back to the West. And in the same way, we come to some place, but then as we get towards the end of our expected duration of stay, then we start to count the days before we have to leave. Yes? You have that experience? So the principle is, we're all getting older. It's a simple fact of life. A child doesn't have that developed intelligence, necessarily. But as we get more mature and serious, and hopefully more responsible for our lives, we start to reckon, well, you know, it's so many years old. How many more days left to go before we actually have to leave the body? So this calculation of time is something seriously worth thinking about in our lives, because obviously we are within the limits, and the time allocated to this body is not allocated by us, it's allocated by Krishna's material nature. It's not within our control, it's within Krishna's control. And we know, Prabhupada explains, that old age is advance notification of impending death. So, for me, that makes a big deal. So, a few points. Prabhupada concludes this purport with a couple of very interesting things. He explains, when Krishna appears, everyone is freed from fear of death. Yet Devaki felt, we're still afraid of Kamsa, although you have appeared as our son. And this is very interesting. Prabhupada says she was more or less bewildered as to why this should be so. And she appealed to the Lord to free her and Vasudev from this fear. So why is Devaki feeling afraid? And it's actually not difficult to understand that any mother has affection for her children and naturally wants to protect them. So Krishna, he is very kind and very pleased to engage in loving dealings with the devotees, that they can actually feel, this is my son. And Devaki is feeling that she's appreciating, because straight after Vasudeva offering so many beautiful prayers, of which this is one, not praying to please give me something, but praying to glorify Krishna and appreciate Krishna. Actually, this is prayer. Glorifying Krishna, appreciating Krishna. These are the sweetest prayers. Although it is said that at the end of offering prayers, it's customary to ask for some benediction. But that's a byproduct. The real thing is actually glorifying Krishna and appreciating him. So straight after Devaki, after Vasudeva offering prayers, Devaki offers her prayers. But she's thinking that Krishna is her son. And she's thinking, although she's saying that you're the supreme personality of Godhead, at the same time she's thinking in terms of protecting Krishna from Kamsa, because Kamsa has already killed so many of your predecessors. So this is a little bewildering for her, because at the same time as being in full knowledge, this very strong paternal, maternal instinct is there, how to protect the child. So it becomes a bewildering state of affairs. But this is the very nice nature of devotional service, that actually to become bewildered by love of Krishna, to become bewildered by loving dealings with Krishna and forgetting that Krishna is actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that we actually have an eternal, very transcendental, particular, unique, loving relationship with Krishna, is the real business of life. And Prabhupada further comments about the moon at the end of this purport. He explains that the principle is, why do the karmis want to go to get a long duration of life? Firstly, this is a bit of a mistake, because as we learn, that you go to the higher planets and you have a very long life. But even Brahma, he lives for 100 years, but his time is going at a pace of 100 years. But for us, it would be like a moment has gone by, and that's a whole year in our time, as we learn from the pastimes of Krishna, when Brahma stole all the calves and cowherd boys. He came back after a moment thinking, oh, what have I done? I'm playing with fire. I messed about with Krishna. I've taken away his calves and cowherd boys. So he came back after a moment. So even though one may live for 100 years and a very long duration of life in the heavenly planets, the higher planets, still, you've got your 100 years. So what is the advantage of going for such a long life when even at the end of it, there's always that gnawing feeling, if we have some intelligence, to understand, well, at the end, I'm going to die. So Prabhupada gives this nice, told a nice story one time, how he observed, he was walking past a butcher's place in Calcutta, and there was a goat being slaughtered. And there was another goat just standing there without realizing that he was going to be next. So these are very significant points for us to thoughtfully dwell upon, that we're next. But Prabhupada makes the point about the moon. He says, if our so-called scientists are going to the moon, why should they come back here? Because the moon, we learn from the Vedic literatures, is actually where one has a duration of life of 10,000 years. So why should one come back to where one has to die very quickly? What's the point? If they'd really gone to the moon, Prabhupada points, well, what's the point of coming back here? So there is a lot of cheating going on in the unfortunate state of affairs, that we're all very much brought up to think in terms of evolution. This is a big lie. But it's something that unfortunately we're all brought up with and conditioned to think in terms of the way we've been educated or miseducated. But this whole idea of going to the moon, obviously this is, for some people, it's a difficult subject. But actually, if we take a look at the Vedic evidence, which is the whole point of devotional service, Vedic evidence, Veda means knowledge, truth. So we have to see things from the author of the Vedas, from his perspective. And then actually we can see things clearly. If we see things from the muddied perspective of someone who's speculating, trying to understand the truth of life by their imperfect senses, and who sadly has a cheating propensity like we all do, then we're going to be sadly misled in so many things. But that Vedic knowledge is to help us understand things in perspective. Now, sometimes people forget, most of the time, that science, which people are very fond of, everything should be scientific these days. But what is science? Science is nothing but pursuit of the truth, to understand things how they actually are. So, yes, we agree. Science is there. But in Bhagavad Gita, we learn that the supreme science is the science of the self. And without understanding that science of the self, all the rest is simply just shooting in the dark, actually. So much ignorance. But the whole point is, yes, we are interested in science, but science means you understand all the evidence before you draw your conclusions. If you draw your conclusions, if you've already decided what the outcome of your study is before you've even finished your study, then actually this is called something other than science. This is called dogma. So if one dogmatically insists, no, we've been to the moon, if we dogmatically insist that no, everything is evolved from matter, if we draw these conclusions without establishing a clear, thorough study of the Vedic evidence, then actually we're not scientists, we're dogmatic fools, mudhas. But if someone's actually going to be intelligent, actually going to be a scientist, they should examine the vast body of Vedic evidence. Why leave that out? Why be dogmatic and ignore the evidence and just come up with a conclusion without actually studying all the evidence? So our principle, Prabhupada's principle, the Acharya's principle, is to present that Vedic knowledge for the education and upliftment and enlightenment of the human society so we can make an informed choice. There was one very nice post we put out on Facebook the other day. It was rather good. It was headed, "Scientists have discovered." What have scientists discovered? They have discovered that if you say it's been discovered by scientists, then everyone will believe it. So, actually, this is not our program, to blindly accept something because another living entity who hasn't, who is simply in the same boat as ourselves, somehow we're putting blind faith in scientific conclusions. But question, have the scientists somehow, by virtue of becoming scientists, become freed from the defects of having imperfect senses and having the tendency to cheat? No. So real science comes in disciplic succession. This is the spiritual science. So this we have to be very careful not to change, not to spoil, not to distort, and present it as it is. And therefore we take great care to study the Vedic conclusions and then come to a sound, sane conclusion as to the business of life, which is to hear, chant, and remember Krishna and go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. I'm sorry I've gone a little over time, but does anybody have any questions?